Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Goodness, I just read this headline. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, September 18th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I was organizing.
Just read what headline?
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Obama picks first openly gay service secretary to lead the Army.
Oh, that's wonderful. They'll be able to give him the distinguished, the feathered boa for exemplary courage in a bathhouse.
No wonder we have so many problems in our military. But that wasn't, this must be gay day or something, because Doritos unveiled bags of rain-colored corn chips yesterday in support of the It Gets Better project. An organization started to encourage gay and lesbian teenagers who have been bullied. And, of course, the package is all, Doritos are in rainbow colors and, you know, rainbows all over the package. And It Gets Better project. I didn't even know there was a project that It Gets Better. And, sometimes in our lives we have to fit in regardless of, and that's all about life is trying to fit in a little bit,
Trying to act like you fit in.
At least act like
you
fit in.
I don't really belong here, but I'm going to act as if I do.
And maybe you wouldn't be bullied so much, but
things, I get that. There are some things, but you know what needs to be done on top of that? We can get into this after you do the market report.
I saw that headline.
The homosexual thing is it's a disease vector. If you want to be homosexual, you are probably going to shorten your life expectancy by 5 and 20 years.
Yeah, we know. I don't buy that anymore, but
I do.
Get it. I don't.
I guarantee you, if they had the same or superior life expectancy, we'd never hear the end of it.
No, I don't buy that anymore, but we can talk about that here in just a little bit. And let's go ahead and get into the market numbers. Another nice day for gold, $8. You're looking at 1140. So we had a nice week, over $30 for gold, up 8 today at 1140. Silver up 4 cents at 1528. Platinum not so nice, down 2 at 985. Palladium down 2 also at 611. USDX today up 0.69 at 95.18. A lot of pressure on crude oil today. Let me update these numbers, make sure that we're getting the. Let's see, crude oil. Let's do crude oil again. Down 2 at 44.82. Paper markets today. Well, I guess it took the investors, quote-unquote investors, a day to decide what that meant for no change in interest rates. The market was down 289 points at 1.74. The NASDAQ was down 66 at 1.36. The S&P was down 32 at 1958. The 10-year yield down 0.09 at 2.13. Euro was down a buck, 1 point, at 1.13. Well, that really moved up yesterday, the euro, if it's down a full point today at 1.13. And let's see, Germany overnight 3% to the downside, Japan 2% to the downside, London 1.3% to the downside, Hong Kong basically unchanged. So that's it in a wrap, Al.
Okay. So what's next?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know where you want to start at, but
start at the beginning. Go to the end.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Uh-huh. No, not that beginning.
Oh.
We've already had that beginning. We need a different beginning now. Here's one. The price of cement in China has collapsed, and that is not good. This is from Business Insider. It said, if China's economy is growing at 7% or more per year, why has the price of cement there dropped by 25% in the last 2 years? You can't build anything permanent without cement. It's a great indicator of how the underlying real economy is actually doing. If people are buying a lot of cement, then it means they have the cash to build large, new, permanent objects, houses, roads, bridges, and cities. If building and construction are on a decline, then the price of cement should fall, and it has fallen 25% over the course of the last 2 years, which is evidence that the Chinese economy is certainly not doing 7% growth a year. It might be doing 3%, and it might not be doing any growth at all. You know, we've talked about this, we've touched on it from time to time, and China is, to some extent, maybe a paper tiger. They have great strength, there's no question about that. But they've also got some problems. And, you know, they're overpopulated. Their pollution can sometimes reach California. It's strong enough to cross the whole Pacific Ocean and reach California. The city of Beijing has sunk 8 feet, if I understand correctly, into the earth. And that's from pumping the water out in the water table below the city. Whole city's dropped about 8 feet. I don't know. You know, you look at some of these things and you say, these people, there are problems over there. And despite the capacities and the abilities that they have, this is not clear sailing. And there's a high probability that before this is done, China is going to be not quite so hot as a lot of people think of it.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up because I brought some numbers from a program I did earlier today about China is now second only to the Canadians in the number of U.S. homes they buy.
Yeah.
And even though we see a little bit of a slowing in China's economy, Chinese investors are stepping up their buying even more in our real estate over here. In the 12 months ended in March, 209,000 U.S. houses were sold to buyers living outside the U.S. or immigrants in the country for less than 2 years. And that represents about 4% of all sales of previously occupied homes in the same period. You have $104 billion in total sales. And half of these sales involved are in Florida, homes in Florida, California, Texas, and Arizona. And those were the four states that had the biggest real estate boom during the real estate situation that we had, and the biggest drop heading into the 2008 recession. So they're over here just scooping everything up, and you know it's. It kind of upsets, should upset a person, because here we had all our jobs, a large percent of our jobs. We've lost jobs to China. Every product that we purchase all goes back to China because there's a lot of product made in China. So they even get a double whammy on that because they get our job money. Now they get the profit from the trinkets that we purchase from China. And then they take that money and they come over here and they buy up all our property.
But you have to expect that to happen. Because we have lost our industrial capacity. If we hadn't, it might be that we would be trading China physical objects and products for whatever physical objects and products they send over here. But what's been happening is we've been buying their products, their physical products and their industrial products. We've been buying them, but we haven't been selling them anything, or at least not as much, and therefore we have run up a deficit.
Right.
A trade deficit with them of something like, I don't know what the remainder is, but they're holding something like $1.2 trillion worth of government bonds at this point in time. And they don't want to just sit on that paper all their lives.
No.
They want to get paid for what they've sent us, and that means they want something physical.
But the
they are
is...
not accepting the idea that payment is simply a piece of paper with somebody's signature on it. They're saying, I want something physical, and there, some of them are coming over here and buying our land. And the lesson is this, is that we made a terrible, terrible mistake by giving up our industries and losing our capacity to produce products that they would take as exports rather than coming back here to buy land, homes, infrastructure, whatever. This is a lesson. This has been in the cards since we started running up trade deficits. And it's not just going to be China. There are going to be other countries. I have no idea how much money we have overseas, but it's all reflecting trade deficits ultimately. At least I believe that's probably the case. Insofar as we ran up trade deficits, people are eventually going to say, well, I want to get paid. And I don't just want a little piece of paper with a signature on it. I want something physical, right, as payment. And that's going to mean a lot of people are going to come here looking for a house, for land, for buildings. So.
Exactly. That was my point. The point is, you know, look what we've done to ourselves. We gave away everything and we give them more. We continue to give everybody more and we continue to get less and less. And
but we had more before.
Yeah, but we don't now.
You got to balance this. You got to, how much do you want right now? You got to produce enough to get it.
It doesn't matter what we had.
You're going to live on credit right now. Want to live on credit? Live large. Day is going to come when you're going to live small.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what we had before. It's gone. And I don't know how anyone that's running for president or anything else will be able to bring it back. The deals that were made were done. And I don't think anybody is good enough to change the deals that were already made and not still bring on some sort of severe problems. The first problem this country has to address, and no one talks about it, is our monetary policies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what has to change first before we can fix anything else. Or what do? They're just going to kick the can a little bit further on down the road, pat themselves on the back, and say, gee, what great jobs we did. You know, they'll lie, they'll steal, they'll cheat. You know, the rich get richer, Wall Street's get richer, and everybody else and those that don't have jobs continue to get those checks. When's it going to stop? It's going to stop on its own because it can't continue to go on. But this is what we've done to ourselves. So you have people coming in buying up our properties, and guess what's going to happen when the real estate property or the real estate turns around? You have all these people here that are buying up these homes, 2-3 homes at a time for investments. Guess what? All they got to do is pack up and go home.
Well, they do, they'll have to sell the homes that are...
Really? Do you think they really care? Do you think our banks are going to go after them if they're living in China or someplace else?
No, that's not my point. What will happen is the homes will be put on the market at a reduced price, and they'll be picked up by people who live here.
And that is that is one thing that they do differently than what we do, is they do use cash to buy these homes. A lot of them will pay cash. So in that respect, it wouldn't behoove them to just pick up and leave and let the property go. But
no, they won't just let it go. But by the time they're done with it, it's, you know,
it remains to be seen.
It's just It's destabilizing. It's disturbing. But it's a natural part of life.
And the thing of it is, they're buying prime properties. There's this one guy who says, you know, these clients are buying condos that are priced between $1 million and $5 million. You have investors from China that are buying in France their vineyards. I don't know how many vineyards France's Bordeaux winemaking region has, but since 2010, they have bought up roughly 100 vineyards in France. So, you know, hey, if France has 200 vineyards, that's a lot. If they have a million, not so much. But the point is, they're out there buying these prime properties, real estate, businesses. How do you think this country and this world's going to fare when these people are owning all of this prime investments in 20 years, 30 years?
Yeah, but we saw some of that when the Soviet Union collapsed. And speculators moved in and they bought Russian. They bought prime Russian property and what remained of factories and one thing and another. And it was a field day for the speculators to come in. But
that's
I think by
Russia.
Now much of
this
that has been repurchased by the Russian people.
But this is the United States.
Yeah, I know.
A little bit different than Russia. So I get
the
same
principle. You'll have a
principle
bad
principle is there, but there's so much more to lose here than Russia ever thought about losing.
Even so, there's a point in time when people, you don't just go into another country and buy your way in. We all like to think you can. You know, we can emigrate to another, get out from under the problems here in the United States and pack up your gold and whatever and emigrate to Uruguay or Argentina or, you know, enjoy the good life. You're going to be an outsider. And you're going to be an outsider as long as you live down there.
True. Okay.
And as long as you have money, people will put up with you. But in the end, you're going to be an outsider. And the day is going to come when a lot of people that emigrate, they really kind of regret it. And they think, you know, I'd rather go back to my home country. And when they do, whatever advantage, they had a bunch of money when they came in. They won't have quite so much when they leave.
I think it's
just unfortunate that we get into circumstances where there are imbalances. You mentioned France. Why have they bought 100 vineyards in France? One of the reasons is because France has had stupid political and economic policies where they take something like 2 hours for lunch. You understand? They only work, I don't know how many hours a day. It's a triviality. It's like a joke, and they've enacted this stuff into law. And the net result, ultimately, if you're not willing to work, you're going to be impoverished. Government cannot legislate your prosperity. The French government can't legislate prosperity for the French people. The United States government can't legislate prosperity for the American people. If you want to be prosperous, you got to go out and work. And the French haven't been working, and now they've lost their prosperity, and it allows people from foreign countries to come in and buy their vineyards. We are in a similar situation. We're not as bad off as France, in my opinion.
Not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. But we've certainly been headed in that direction. And what are you going to do? You know, you can learn the lesson if you care to learn it. And then you can say the next politician who comes up with some BS argument about why we have to provide more welfare and why more subsidies for the rich. And, you know, here's what needs to be done. We need to get back to work. That's what needs to be done. And what the politicians need to do is encourage that mindset and encourage our capacity to work. And if they'll do that, we can become prosperous again. And if we aren't going to work, guess what? We are going to starve. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the3w's.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to encourage folks to give us a call, and I just want to touch on this briefly, Al. And you know, we talked about the various dates and concerns that people have had. And I've certainly called a weakness beginning early 2015. You're going to see weakness over the summer months in, you know, August. And we're not done with this yet, folks. And but no one can predict dates and times with the blood moon, with the Shemitah, with our debt coming. To me, I think that's going to be the biggest eye-opener and the biggest challenges that we face is, you know, when it gets down to the our fiscal budget, and you know, if any of these Republicans pull through, like they wanted to fund, you know, Planned Parenthood and Obama veto. I mean, it could get interesting at that point in time, but it might also bring some a little bit of facts, or maybe not facts, because we never get true facts from the government, but at least numbers to see exactly where we are. And as we all know, you know, what, the debt clock has pretty much stayed the same, or the numbers have stayed the same for the past how many months, Al?
I don't know. It's 6-8 weeks anyway, isn't it?
Oh, it's much longer than that.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, much longer than that. So, you know, I think...
I set my watch by the debt clock.
Do you? Yeah. But, I mean, I think people, they gear up all for something to happen. When it doesn't happen, they either get disgusted, they, oh, well, you know, they go do something else, they don't pay attention. And that's the worst thing you can do, folks. And that's why we talk about the fundamentals on this program, because that is what's going to protect you, is the fundamentals. It makes you understand the truth behind everything, the process, and the future. The fundamentals predict the future. It just doesn't give you a date. But you can create all kinds of scenarios and dates. And hey, we're in hurricane season, you know, okay, let's predict for a hurricane. Everybody prepares for it and so forth. The hurricane doesn't come. The next warning for the hurricane, well, you know, that was no big deal the last time, and I'm already prepared enough, and that's dangerous. You focus on the fundamentals, and you buy gold and silver, what's suitable for you, and you're turning those fiat current dollars that you have into gold and silver. That's what gold and silver is. You buy gold and silver. Gold is the insurance policy. Gold is the savings account. Silver is your checking account, and we'll help you understand that. All you have to do is give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And on Monday, we do have Greg Hunter from USA Watchdog joining us for most of the program on Monday. So make sure you check in with us, and you can listen to the program live on our website. Just go up to the bar at the top of the page. And if you miss it at 4 p.m. Eastern time, if you miss it, we certainly archive the program. So, and I want to thank you in advance for your support, and of course for listening to Discount Gold and Silver Financial Survival. What's next, Al?
An article, another one from Business Insider that's interesting to me. The headline is, "Looks like banks might have rigged another huge market." Now, that's an interesting headline, and we're going to get back to that one. I'll just read a little of the text out of this, and we'll go back and consider the markets, consider the headline a little bit. It says, "The market for U.S. Treasury bonds may have been rigged." That's according to a federal antitrust lawsuit first reported by Bloomberg's Alexandra Skaggs and Matthew Leising. The plaintiffs, Cleveland Bakers and Teamsters Pension Fund, represented by law by Quinn Emanuel, Urquhart, and Sullivan, claim the Treasury dealers, including Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Morgan Stanley, coordinated to manipulate primary market Treasury auctions. And they, based on data from a professor at New York University, whose analysis indicates that 69% of certain Treasury auctions, so-called reissued Treasuries, look suspicious. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley declined to comment. J.P. Morgan could not immediately be reached for comment. Okay, now what's interesting about this? Now, whether the Treasury auctions have or have not been rigged, regardless of that, the news for me is that a mainstream news outlet, media outlet, that's Business Insider, is reporting claims of market rigging as credible. Business Insider is not the first mainstream media outlet to implicitly admit that market rigging claims are credible. There is a growing willingness to believe markets are rigged. And that willingness, I think, will cause whatever rigging that does take place to diminish or completely stop in the foreseeable future. Let's go back to that headline for a second. The headline, "It looks like banks might have rigged another huge market." They're not saying, oh my gosh, they've rigged one market. I've never heard of such a thing. They're saying, oh, they've rigged another one. Maybe the second one, maybe the third, maybe the tenth. We don't know how many. But Business Insider, this is not spectacular. This is not amazing to them. You know, it wasn't too long ago when people from the Gold Antitrust Action Committee were, they've been telling us for at least a decade that the gold markets are rigged. And for most of that time, they were dismissed as crackpots, all right, by the mainstream media. And now, in the last year or so, maybe even 6 months, but we're beginning to see mainstream media treating these claims of market rigging as credible. Now, whether the Treasury markets are rigged, that's not my argument. I don't care whether they are or they aren't per se. But the point is, the awareness is growing that the markets are rigged. And once that happens, You know, this is like another one of those leaves in the breeze we talk about on the program from time to time. The report from Business Insider signals that the price of gold should be much higher in the near future. Why? Because if we're beginning, if not just you and me, you and I and Melody, it's not just whether we believe in market rigging, it's becoming a more credible concept in the American electorate. And that means sooner or later political pressure is going to be brought to stop it, or at least reduce it dramatically. And if the market rigging stops, what's going to happen to the price of gold? It's almost certainly going to go up. You know, I mean, once they stop rigging the market, the price of gold should explode. Now, are they going to stop today, tomorrow? Nope. But I'm going to bet you that everybody on Wall Street who has previously rigged the market with much glee and said, yay, we're going to get rich by rigging the market, they're now wondering if maybe they could go to jail. And they're not going to be quite so enthusiastic about rigging the markets. I think they're going to pull in their horns, and as they do, we're going to see equities go down, and we're going to see precious metals go up.
Absolutely. I was just thinking of a thought here because I'm thinking of a thought. I was just thinking here, and these guys, I mean, they pay their fines. You know, maybe this group is looking to have a fine paid. I mean, you could probably prove any of Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan. You could probably take any market and accuse them of market rigging, which they probably rigged, and get yourself some money from them, as long as they don't have to declare that they're guilty. You know, and so because this whole system has been rigged, and you know, we have Rob West on the program. And one of the LIBOR rates. Are you kidding me? Everything in this world that has to do with loan, all the derivatives, everything, it was all based on the LIBOR rate. Everybody knew it was rigged. Little Timmy Geithner knew that it was rigged. They all knew it was rigged. And what came out of it? All of those contracts should be voided. And you know they can't do that.
Oh, they don't dare.
They wouldn't dare, but I mean...
They can't. I mean, they might be forced to do it before it's all over, but they aren't going to do it voluntarily.
Well, they'll be forced to do it because the whole system will crack, and that'll go along with it. And this includes our auctions, our treasuries, if it has been rigged. I mean, it's, you know, it is truly amazing.
But you know what else is amazing, or at least interesting? It says the market for U.S. Treasury bonds may have been rigged. That's what we hear from Business Insider. That's according to a federal antitrust lawsuit. The plaintiffs, Cleveland Bakers and Teamsters Pension Fund, they're the ones that filed this lawsuit. The government is not on its own coming out and trying to say, oh, my gosh, we have market rigging and we're shocked, I tell you. And then they're going to slap some wrists or whatever. This is happening because somebody's pension fund, right, is arguing that they have been deprived of the true value of their investments by this market rigging. There's a lawsuit going on here, which is to say private parties are essentially compelling the government to investigate and determine whether or not there is or is not market rigging in a particular part of the, you know, in this case, the treasury markets. So it's interesting. Government's not saving us, but maybe the Teamsters are, and their pension fund. They may be doing us some good. It's interesting. Government's not helping us, but private entities are. So if the truth is coming out, it won't be because the government finds it. The reason the government won't find it is they already know. They already know it's rigged. They're part of the rigging. They're not going to go looking for it. Now they're just going to hope that they can keep a lid on this. And we can wind up blaming Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Morgan Stanley. We can blame them, and it never goes any deeper to where we find out what the government had to do with it. So, markets have been rigged. The public is becoming increasingly aware of that rigging. It's no longer an incredible story. It is now a credible contention. And insofar as that's true, it should mean that the amount of rigging will at least diminish, and maybe, I'm not going to bet that it's going to stop. As long as there's money there, somebody's going to have an angle on how to make a fast buck.
Yeah.
Right? They've been rigging markets since time began, and they'll rig them in the future, too. But they won't be institutionally rigged with the cooperation of the government. We'll get down to where rigging is, instead of being legal because the government allows it, as President, what did Nixon say? He says, if the president does it, that means it's legal. That's the way the government thinks. If the government does it, that means it's legal. Government's going to get out of rigging. They won't be able to take the political heat, and the remaining privateers that try to rig, they'll be caught and jailed. But main point, rigging slows, price of gold goes up.
Everyone's happy when everybody's making money, no matter how you make it, I suspect.
Well,
except the poor
I'm not
guy.
Happy if they're making money and I'm not making
I know.
There's the problem. If everybody's making money, yeah, we're all happy. But when you set it up where some of us make money and others are the ones who are the victims of them making money, those of us who are victimized by the market rigging and market losses, we tend to get a little bit peeved.
Leave my gold and silver alone.
Yeah, I know.
And allow it to go where it should be. Heck, even in adjusted inflation, you know, would be 2,400. We never got there. When we got there, we got close. But here's some numbers, Al, that you have a topic on about our debt. And I have these numbers that were sent to me. And it was about the last rate hike in June 2006. Global government debt has increased by $24 trillion or 85% to $52 trillion global. Global household debt has increased by $8 trillion, and global corporate debt has increased by $23 trillion or 69% to $57 trillion. Total global debt to the non-financial sector has increased by $55 trillion. And in addition, the total global market cap of stocks has increased by $25 trillion. The total global debt plus stock equity has increased since the last Fed rate hike by $81 trillion or 60%. To $216 trillion, which is equal to 289% of gross world product. I mean, when you look at these numbers and you look at the percentages and you look to see what has happened in these short years, and you're talking about these trillions of dollars, and these are, yes, global markets, and you tune it down to what, you know, you want to talk about is the defaulting on its debt. I mean, these are incredible numbers.
I know.
I mean, there's just no way. How can anyone not how can anyone not look at these numbers and say, yeah, we're doomed. The world is doomed.
Well, they can, because most people think if the debt is repudiated, what's that got to do with them? They don't see themselves relevant. All right, the government repudiates its debt, national debt. What do we care? No big deal. You know, but it is a big deal, because one man's debt is another man's asset. If they wipe out $18 trillion of debt, they also wipe out $18 trillion of paper assets. Can the economy survive that loss? And the answer is almost certainly no. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Don't make
the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Before we continue talking about the debt, I just wanted to remind the listeners our special yesterday, Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces, or I should actually say the day before. They are higher, $1,510. And I didn't increase the silver prices on those or anything, so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Actually, what you'll receive is a Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold piece. You'll receive a Morgan silver dollar. You receive the shipping is all included in that. But the price did increase to $1,510. Give us a call, 800-375-4188.
Okay, we've got an article here from Doug Casey. Many of you will recognize his name. He is one of the most well-known gold investors, advocates. He's not only into gold, he's into all sorts of investments, gold being one of them. But here's an article he's written. It's three reasons why the U.S. government should default on its debt today. I'll just read a few excerpts from the article. U.S. government debt stood at $18 trillion in 2015. That's the official debt. Off-balance sheet borrowing and the buildup of massive contingent liabilities aren't included. That may add another $50 trillion or so. He's coming up with perhaps $68 trillion in debt, actual debt. John Williams says the actual debt's probably closer to $100 trillion. And the Congressional Budget Office, about 18 months, 2 years ago, they said it was, including unfunded liabilities, was over $200 trillion. And economist Lawrence Kotlikoff has agreed, in the last 6 months or so, that the total net national debt is in excess of $200 trillion. Put that in perspective, that translates into something like $650,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. Family of four would be up for about $2.5 million. That's your fair share of the national debt. Can I see a show of hands of everyone who's got the money to pay your fair share of the national debt? Even the $18 trillion, if that's all the national debt is, if that's the truth of the matter, it still works out to about $55,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. And again, can I see a show of hands? Everybody's got an extra $55,000 that they have and that they're willing to donate to good old Uncle Sam to help pay the national debt. And I don't see many hands. And I don't think it's just because we're doing radio. I don't think many people have raised their hands. Now, the article continues. My point in that analysis is for me. That's an oversimplification. You can't just... It isn't entirely reasonable to sit back and judge the national debt according to how much it amounts to for every man, woman, and child in the country. What is your fair share? What's my fair share? That's not necessarily solid economics, but it makes a metaphorical analysis, a comparison. Say, holy cow, how many of you have an extra 55 grand? That's the minimum. Could turn out into something like 250, maybe 650,000 for your fair share of the national debt. It just can't be paid. You might be able to pay it at 18 trillion. If that's all we owe, you might be able to pay it. We might have to go over a period of, say, 10 years if we didn't go any deeper into debt. And you know that's going to happen. So the point is the debt is not going to be paid. And Mr. Casey is arguing three reasons why the U.S. government should default on its debt today. Here's his first reason. To avoid turning future generations into serfs. All right? I think that's right. There's no reason this business about going into debt in order to buy votes and public support and public sentiment now, we are going into debt, which means what? We are leaving the debt to be paid by our children and grandchildren who don't understand what's going on right now. They're looking for their next big wheel. They don't just drive around in the driveway and make a bunch of noise. They don't know anything about national debt. They don't understand that the government is betraying their future. And if these children, future generations, are dumb enough to pay the national debt that was incurred by their parents and their grandparents, well, maybe they belong, they should be serfs. But I'll tell you, in my opinion, the kids should just say, to heck with that, we're not paying the old folks' debts. People run up your debts. You didn't want to pay taxes for what you wanted. You didn't want to work for what you wanted. You wanted to just go into debt and live large. Well, now you live large, but we're not paying your debt. So I would agree with Casey's first reason, avoid turning future generations into serfs. His second reason is to punish those who have enabled the state by lending it money. One of the reasons government has grown so big, one of the reasons that we are seeing the emergence of the overt emergence of an American police state is that we've given government too much money. Right? If government couldn't borrow the money, it wouldn't be able to behave in such a cavalier manner. If government had to live on a cash and carry basis, if you want it now, you pay for it now. No borrowing. Under those circumstances, government can't come in and be our best buddy and give us all the subsidies and all the welfare we think we're entitled to. Under those circumstances, government has to behave like a Dutch uncle who isn't going to part with a nickel or a dime if he doesn't have to. And as a result, they teach us that lesson. You got to work. You want something to work for it. Don't want to work for it? Forget it. You're not going to get it. It's that simple. Government's been able to distort our psyche, our national psyche, by allowing us to have things that we can't read, that we haven't worked for, we haven't paid for, we can't really afford, except by virtue of borrowing more money. And it's just stupid. Everybody knows this. This is like the man who's using his Visa to pay off his MasterCard, to pay off his American Express. He's going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. You can do this for a while, but inevitably, this is going to end badly. The guy is headed for bankruptcy. And so are we. As a nation, we're doing the same thing. We shouldn't have loaned as much money as we have to the government. The government would never have grown as big as it is if we hadn't loaned it so much money. It wouldn't have grown as oppressive as it is, and we wouldn't have put ourselves in a position where one of these days we're going to be hurt very badly when we are required to pay the debt. And say, oh, here we are. We need that $55,000 from you now to pay off on the $18 trillion, or we need the $650,000 from you to pay off on the $200 trillion. You know? And you're going to say, what? What? And if you're sensible, just tell them, no, I'm not paying. People, so in any case, Doug Casey wants to punish those who've loaned money to the government. And I think he's got a point. A lot of people say, that's un-American, that's not patriotic. Yeah, I think it is. If we loaned less money to the government, we wouldn't have a government that's so overwhelming and oppressive at this particular time. Third, to make it impossible for the state to borrow in the future, at least for a while. I think that's the point to this. If we can make it difficult, if we shut down the creditors and we make them understand, you're going to loan money to the government, you're going to lose your butt. You understand? And it's nobody to blame but yourself. You're just enabling. You're enabling a police state to develop. And you want to be rewarded for that? You're enabling a welfare state. You're enabling a socialist, communist country to a government to overwhelm this nation. Lend them more money. Forget it. Don't lend them more money. And to a significant degree, that's already happened, which is part of the reason why the Federal Reserve has had to pick up the slack and lend most of the money that the government spent in the last, the government has borrowed in the last several years, because people just stopped buying government bonds. And average investors said, no, this is stupid. And the Federal Reserve said, not to worry, we'll buy the bonds. Well, they have for a while, but we'll watch and see how this breaks out. And when it finally goes down, it may be that the Federal Reserve will be destroyed from lending all this money to the government. Nevertheless, although it's inevitable that government must default on its debt, there's no way government's going to pay off its debt. The reason why government shouldn't and can't voluntarily default on its debt is that one man's debt is another man's asset. Every bit of the national debt is memorialized as a paper debt instrument, a U.S. bond, right? When they borrow $1 billion, they issue a bond for $1 billion or a score of smaller bonds, but they still issue bonds, right? Those bonds are out there. They're in people's pension funds, like the pension fund that we talked about earlier in the program, when the Teamsters, Cleveland Bakers and Teamsters Pension Fund, they're suing the banks because they say somebody's been rigging the bond market. Well, yeah, and the government's in it up to their ears because the government can't pay. It knows it can't pay. And they've got to rig the markets to keep them going and also minimize the stress on the U.S. government. The point, though, is that every bit of the national debt memorialized with a paper debt instrument, U.S. bond, and the current holders treat those bonds as paper assets. They think they've got some real wealth because they've got a piece of paper. Well, the government secretary of the treasury or somebody signed the bond. Yay, I got $100,000. Yay, I've got $1 million. No, you don't. You have a piece of paper with a signature on it in a world where the debt is so great that they can't all be paid. All right? For example, again, if your pension fund is largely invested in U.S. bonds and the government repudiates the national debt, your pension fund's investment in bonds will disappear, and so will much of your retirement income. One man's debt is another man's asset when we cut out the debt. If we default, say, that's it, we're not paying the debt. Okay, here's the problem. We'll not only repudiate the debt, we will repudiate the value of the paper debt instruments that memorialize that debt. We will wipe out, if we wipe out $18 trillion in debt, we wipe out $18 trillion in paper assets. Can the economy withstand that loss? I don't think it can. If the government defaults on the official $18 trillion or $100 trillion according to John Williams or $200 trillion according to the Congressional Budget Office of the national debt, they wipe out the correlative $18 trillion, $100 trillion, or $200 trillion in paper assets that memorialize the national debt. Can't destroy that much paper assets without collapsing the U.S. and perhaps global economies for several years, maybe a decade or more. I'd like to wipe out the national debt. I'd like to wipe out our fiat currency. I know that both events are bound to happen sooner or later, regardless of whether I like it or I don't like it. But I'm also convinced that when the national debt is repudiated, the correlative loss in paper assets will push this nation to a third world standard of living. When those paper assets disappear, where are we going to get the currency? When you say, I'd like to borrow the money to build a new shopping center. Oh, yeah? Where do you suppose we're going to get the currency to lend if the bonds disappear? The system just won't be able to reproduce these things and spin them out of thin air. When the bond, the debt disappears, the assets disappears, what do we borrow? What runs our credit cards? What do we have for capital to build a new factory or bring a new invention online? As I've said for years, what can't be paid won't be paid. The U.S. doesn't have and won't get the money it needs to repay its current debts. Government won't. Therefore, those debts will be mostly repudiated. But no rational person should be pushing for that repudiation because the result will be national catastrophe. The nation will survive the catastrophe and perhaps a subsequent decade of poverty and even violence. Then we'll be off to the races again to see if we can restore our former power and prosperity. But while the nation will survive, many Americans will not. It's for that reason that I warn that this debt default catastrophe is coming, but I don't welcome its arrival. I don't advocate that it should happen. A lot of people are going to get hurt very, very badly unless they have found a way to protect their savings and they have some capital that can get them through the problem that's headed our way. And it won't be paper dollars. It won't be U.S. It won't be pension funds that are beefed up with U.S. Treasuries. We're going to have a terrible problem, and the ones that are going to get through this are the ones who have invested something, some of their wealth, all of their wealth, whatever, in precious metals or tangible items. You can do this to some degree with land, and who knows? There's a bunch of real things, but if you're holding paper, you are in trouble, trouble, trouble. Then Doug Casey closed. He said, the consequences of this are grim, but the timing is hard to predict. Either the creditors are going to walk away unhappy in the case of a default, or the holders of all dollars are going to be stuck with worthless paper in the case of hyperinflation. This is going to be trouble, and it's going to be big trouble, and if you folks are wise, you'll prepare for it. We are out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We want to thank you for listening to the program. We will be back on Monday with Greg Hunter. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Never seems to be a single penny left for me.